Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. During the retabling of Budget 2023, Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim spoke of plans to amend the Whistleblower Protection Act this year to better safeguard informers of corruption and misconduct. He also said the government was planning to table the Public Procurement Act soon. However, no details have been provided as to what the amendments will be or when either of these bills will be tabled in Parliament. So let's ask our guests today what they would like to see go into these planned bills. Let's start with anti-corruption activist K. Sudhakaran Stanley. He is the Deputy CEO at the Centre to Combat Corruption and Cronyism, better known as C4. Stanley, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me. What do you make of the Prime Minister's announcement to reform the Whistleblower Protection Act?
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Melissa, for having me on the show. Well, I think the announcement by Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim is very, very much welcome. It's long overdue. And I think this is one of the biggest things that we have been, pushing for, which is the amendments to the Whistleblower Protection Act. Because when the government says that it wants to actually accelerate the fight against corruption, one of the main areas that we need to look at is how do we actually protect those who actually come forward to blow the whistle. And Malaysia has very weak whistleblower protection laws. Since the last 13 years since inception, there have been a number of cases, and I think a major failure on the part of the Act to actually protect whistleblowers that come forward. We have seen many, many cases in the past. Very recent, of course, you can even quote the case of our former staff, Lalita, who exposed certain issues in regards to the current chief commissioner and was herself sued by the chief commissioner. These kind of cases, and not only her, of course, there are many other different cases, actually shows us that the weakness in the law needs to be addressed, and it's time, and I think we really welcome the explanation or the announcement by Prime Minister that he's about to actually table this.
Stanley, can you elaborate exactly where those weaknesses are?
So if you look at the couple of sections, if you look at section 6.1, which one of the main issues here is where the disclosure is only allowed to be made to an enforcement agency. And this becomes a problem, right? Because there are times where also the complainant wants to go to the media, wants to go to the lawyer, or wants to go even and make a complaint to different government agencies and so on. But if that person does that, then what happens is the Act doesn't cover the person from giving the person protection. So that's a major flaw. Secondly, the information or whatever offences that is being made about cannot be protected under Official Secrets Act or even some of the financial banking laws in this country. So if anyone comes forward and discloses information which is under the OSA or under a financial banking law, that person automatically will not be given protection. And in fact, he may even be charged under the OSA for actually providing those information and so on. So these are major issues that we have called upon for amendments to be made. Because really, you know, if we want to encourage people to come forward to blow the whistle, we must provide them with proper, strong protection, especially when we are talking in the context of civil servants here, right? Many civil servants are afraid to actually come about and blow the whistle because they know that some sort of detrimental action may be taken against them. And even, you know, when we talk about detrimental action, the Act in itself doesn't even clearly set out who would actually be responsible to be held accountable when detrimental action are taken against an officer. For example, so I've had cases in the past where government officers who made complaint to MACC we actually transferred department to different departments to different states. So now in this kind of situation, now who's actually held accountable? Would the Ketua Pengarah of the department, or would the minister, or would the prime minister? So this sort of issue should be actually clearly spelled out in the Act, so that when it happens in the future, we know who to go after. And civil servants are also really compel and feel protected to come forward and actually make a complaint.
Okay, so you laid out a few of the weaknesses. I might pull at those different threads. Let's start with the fact that external whistleblowing is not allowed. So whistleblowers can only go to, is it PDRM and MACC? Are those the only enforcement agencies that they can report?
Yeah, enforcement agencies like immigration, like customs. Okay. All those have enforcement powers. These are enforcement agencies.
I see. Okay. All right. So how do you see the a reform to whistleblower laws being expanded to include civil societies, anti-graft operations like yourself, media like ourselves. How do you see us playing a role in being part of the whistleblower law?
Yeah, so basically, of course, the enforcement agencies can be the one who actually receives the complaint, but the complainant should not lose the protection when he actually goes to third parties like the media or, you know, civil society organizations like us or even lawyers to actually seek for help or expose some of the issues. And especially when, for example, let's say we give them a time frame after 3 months, the investigation has not been actually investigated, there's no action has been taken, no one has been charged, then the person should actually be allowed to go and get the help of third party, right? So by saying that you actually cannot go to a third party and disclose the information, it really defeats the purpose of that. So that's why we are calling for that there should be a proper mechanism or a due process that actually follows that allows the complainant, probably after a certain amount of time, if his complaint is not investigated, then he can actually go and meet a third party, the NGOs or the media, to actually expose whatever that is happening or the issues that he's facing within and so on. Mm.
What about the fact that whistleblowers are not protected if there are disclosures under the OSCE or banking laws? And we saw that, I think, with Rafizi Ramli's case with NFC. How do we get around that? Because, again, the Official Secrets Act is, you know, you can't get around that. What would whistleblower reform need to take into account?
Yeah, so when we talk about the Whistleblower Protection Act, I think in tandem of reforms, what we are also calling for the Anwar's government to actually table is also the Freedom of Information Act. So the Freedom of Information is very, very important. We want public to participate, right, in anti-corruption efforts, in nation building. There needs to be, the public should have the avenue to actually have the information that they want. They should be educated on what's actually happening within. They should be able to request for documents and be the eyes and ears of, you know, the entire situation. So, but we don't have a Freedom of Information law. So first, we need to call the government to table Freedom of Information law, and for the OSA to actually be used only on really secretive issues such as defense, because we know there is a need to actually narrow down that scope, and we should include a defense of public interest in the act. So when actually a civil servant or even the public who wants to disclose the information in purpose because it is a matter of public interest, then he should not be actually charged or, you know, be regarded as committing an offense under the OSA for that purpose when he exposes some malpractices or corruption. Because it doesn't make sense when someone comes and exposes, for example, an LCS scandal issue where billions have been swindled off, and then he actually been charged in court because he exposed that issue. Where's the balance here, right? So that's what we're calling for, a defense of public interest to actually be included into that legislation.
And then that issue of avenues for recourse when there are actions taken against, retaliation taken against whistleblowers, who do you think who should be accountable in charge of that?
Yeah, so if you look at the private sector's corporate liability provision, right, this also brings us to my other point I also want to touch, right? The new corporate liability provision, Section 17A, makes actually the directors of company and even the top management of companies liable if their company staff were to be involved or agents were to be involved in any corrupt practices. Now, the under Section 17A, there is a point where the Prime Minister's Department has actually come out with a guideline for companies to follow, where one of the guidelines is where there should be an internal whistleblowing mechanisms within the companies that need to be set up, and that can be used as a defense in court in the event the managers or their board of directors are actually called and be charged up in court and so on. So my point here is this, when we talk about the internal disclosure channel earlier, there's no that we talked about, right, the disclosure channels, Section 6 is also actually not harmonized with this Section 17A, because Section 17A here calls for the companies to set up an internal whistleblower protection system, while Section 6 of the Whistleblower Act says, no, you cannot go and report to anyone except to the enforcement agency. So there's a clash of the two different laws here, which we expect the government to actually identify and to make it correct in the coming amendments. And when we talk about making who responsible as your question, I think we can follow the spirit of Section 17A here, where the top directors of the company or the top management of the company are actually held accountable for any reprisal actions or any bad actions taken against the employee. And in the sense of a government, I think it'd be good to actually spell out that the ketua pengarah of that particular ministry or the most top position person in that particular bahagian or government agency must be held accountable if that person is transferred or sacked. And there should be a proper grievance mechanism set out within the Act where these government servants actually come forward and make the complaint if they actually got into that situation. And also, Melissa, if you look at the Act itself, there is no avenue or mention about setting up what they call as a grievance mechanism or alternate dispute resolution mechanism, where actually if some sort of action is taken against the staff. So instead of going to court, because court cases are very expensive and very long time. So instead of going to court and actually sticking up these cases, the Act should actually provide for an alternate dispute resolution mechanism, or mediation, where government servants, civil servants, or even the public sector can go through this mediation process with their employees or with their pengarahs and to see if any retaliation action is taken against them for it.
Stanley, am I remembering this correctly, that Anwar Ibrahim, I think, proposed having civil servants report any kind of irregularities or misconduct or corruption to him directly to the Prime Minister's office? Is that accurate? Do you see that as an avenue to increase whistleblower protection?
Yeah, I think he made that comment a couple of weeks ago in Parliament. And so, but I think it defeats the purpose. This is the thing. I mean, okay, you can tell civil servants to actually inform you of what's happening. Yeah, of course, as a Prime Minister, you want to know and you want to get down to the bottom of the issue. But it also tells us that means there's a serious issue of trust on the MACC, that they will actually be able to handle the complaint seriously. And this is why the Prime Minister himself is saying, come to me and make the complaint, right? Because he recognizes there's a serious problem of trust. So when we talk about the amendments to whistleblower protection, Melissa, as I've said, the freedom of information is one. The other important thing, in fact, we were quite disappointed that under the budget for this year, there was no mention about the reforms to MACC. This is a very important thing, right? You have a strong whistleblower protection law, but the MACC, it's a public trust on the MACC is like at the lowest possible level. And people are still not going to go to MACC and report because they will feel that their investigation might not even be given any merit, or they might not be seriously taken, or worse, end up being victimized themselves if they actually come forward to make a complaint.
Thank you so much for speaking with me. That was K. Sudhakar and Stanley from C4 Group. We're going to take a very quick break here and Consider This. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about the pledge to fight corruption that was made by Prime Minister Anwar Ibrahim during the tabling of Budget 2023. This includes plans to amend the Whistleblower Protection Act and to table a Public Procurement Act. Joining us now is Dr. Tricia Yeo. She's the CEO of the think tank Ideas Malaysia. Tricia, what do you make of the Prime Minister's announcement to reform, in particular the Whistleblower Protection Act? I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like there have been attempts at reforming whistleblower protection laws before. Do you think we might see more than lip service this time?
So hi, Melissa. Thanks for having me. I think that was very welcome. In fact, last week, Ideas, together with a group of other anti-corruption-based NGOs, had a joint press conference calling for a set number of items that we would like to see as far as governance and anti-corruption reforms are concerned. One of them was actually on the amendments that were necessary to the Whistleblower Protection Act. So in that sense, we're very pleased to see that made the cut into the budget speech, as well as the Government Procurement Act, which are some of the things that we've been calling for a long time. Now, as far as the Whistleblower Protection Act is concerned, essentially it stems from the fact that as citizens, like common citizens, all of us actually have access to some kind of facts or documents about corruption. And so the expectation should not always be that we leave it to the law enforcement agencies or to the government of the day to execute these things, but that we have that kind of power in our hands, right? So that's the idea behind the whistleblower protection. So the act, yes, there was an act that was enacted in the year 2010. And in fact, in 2017, IDEAS already produced and published a policy paper that listed down the kinds of amendments that we would want to see that would further empower citizens and also protect whistleblowers, compared to what currently is the case. So the three main areas that our policy brief addressed were number one, protection for whistleblowers, number two, independence of the act, and the third would be on whistleblowing mechanism itself. So in terms of what actual amendments there are that need to be made to the act, I think the first would be section 7 on whistleblower protection and section 8 on the protection of confidential information. So this would, if we were to amend this, allow disclosure to non-enforcement agencies without losing protection or being subject to imprisonment or a fine. So right now, the act is good, but it means that you have to provide information only to a set number of law enforcement agencies. Right. And if you submit to anyone else, then you're not considered a whistleblower. That's one.
So Tricia, just to follow up on that external whistleblowing part, right? So do you think that, so help me understand why this is necessary. And if such an amendment might receive pushback from enforcement agencies?
Yeah, I can imagine why law enforcement agencies might want to restrict it because they would then lose that role that they would play, right, as sort of guardians, where if you're a whistleblower and you can whistleblow to a media agency or to another political party, but not to the law enforcement agency like the MACC, for example, then would they lose that legitimacy? Maybe they also feel that they don't have the locus standi to be able to oversee that particular case. So I think some kind of mechanisms should be used so that it's still possible for the body that is being reported to, say a media agency, to forward that information on and to have some kind of validation method that the whistleblower is still considered defined legally under the act as a whistleblower. So I think there are ways around it. And I think hopefully the law enforcement agencies would be able to see it that way as well. Yeah.
Tricia, so there are avenues for whistleblowers or people who want to blow the whistle on misconduct or corruption to do it anonymously. But what you're saying here is to enhance the whistleblower protection so that they don't have to do it anonymously and don't have to fear reprisal or retaliation for speaking out on these issues. Can you explain to us why it's important to speak out and not anonymously, to have your name there? What's the difference between whistleblowing anonymously and not?
I mean, I suppose if you are doing it anonymously with that fear that the name is being revealed, then that person constantly lives under fear that the name will be revealed by the person that you reported it to. Whereas if it's done non-anonymously, meaning that the name is there, then the person can also feel a little bit freer to perhaps even speak to necessary external parties or be called in for inquiries or even speak to the media, because that person, by doing that act of whistleblowing, might also want the public to understand the nature of the case. And we should be empowering people like that, not asking them to be hidden behind a shroud of anonymity. If we truly believe that the role of whistleblowing is important in the current environment. So I'll just get on very quickly to like some of the other amendments. So the other section is section 6 on disclosure of improper conduct, where we remove the limits of the types of disclosures permitted, right? So this would mean that you could also protect whistleblowers who, in disclosing the evidence, may breach certain laws, like the OSA, the Penal Code, or banking secrecy laws. And this is what happened to Rafizi, if you recall, under the Bafia, right? So he could not be given whistleblower protection status. And as we know, the Official Secrets Act is another piece of legislation that needs, if not amendments, complete repeal. Because OSA is just too extensive. It covers all government documents by default, so they're considered classified by default. Another section is on the revocation of whistleblower protection. So we believe that prior involvement in misconduct should not automatically lead to the revocation of that protection, because if the person is involved in that case, it could be that the person suddenly realizes that, hey, you know, I would like to whistleblow on this particular case that my directors or that my boss is involved in and trying to hide. So that person should also be able to be granted that status and not status be revoked. And finally, on the power of the minister, this is on section 4, to issue directions to remove the ministerial oversight to ensure a greater independence of the act. So those are in some of the amendments that we think would be really important, and it could change the way whistleblowing is done in the country. Of course, there are other things, low-hanging fruits, that don't require amendments, and I'm happy to get into that.
Sorry, quick one. The last bit about the ministerial oversight. Are you saying that currently ministers have a say as to who gets whistleblower protection, who doesn't, who gets it revoked?
The section, it provides the minister the power to issue directions. So I suppose that's broad-based enough to be able to make decisions. I mean, it's issue directions.
All right. So can intervene in any shape or form.
And are you... to be honest, it's quite a common phrase in many Malaysian law, many of the acts. The minister is typically given quite a substantial amount of powers to direct as they see fit. So just probably a broader based reform, if the Attorney General's chambers are listening in, for the law minister, you know, many of our acts actually do provide very strong overarching powers to the minister of whichever area that is.
And you mentioned that there are some reforms that don't require amendments?
Yeah, so I think some of the other things that don't require amendments could already be done now as a low-hanging fruit, right? So the mechanism of whistleblowing, where there could be these specialized and dedicated units set up within enforcement agencies to handle disclosures, kind of like a one-stop point for whistleblowing. It's more accessible, it's more uniform, it's more, you know, the public just becomes more aware of these procedures and processes. The second, of course, is to increase the frequency with which a whistleblower is updated on the progress of the investigation. Because right now you report it and then there's no obligation for the agency to come back to the whistleblower. Because sometimes I'm sure the whistleblower is also anxious as to the status of the case. And finally, I mean, this one could be up for debate. You know, it's about whether or not there can be greater remuneration offered to whistleblowers. But it's debatable because, you know, do you actually want to give them more incentive, or, you know, could that, like, is that a wrong kind of incentivization for blowing on corruption? I mean, I don't know. I think that's something that we can discuss.
Yes, definitely. That is a debatable issue, I think. Just very quickly, in the couple of minutes that we have left, I do want to get your thoughts on the report card for this unity government, 100 days report card. When it comes to institutional reform and its commitment to good governance, how would you assess it?
I think that the Prime Minister has made very good statements and overtures. The positioning and the tone that he has taken are necessary. So he has said, for example, that he will not tolerate direct negotiations and preferably do things on open tender. The budget speech also said as much, that some of these contracts that are of large volume are going to be renegotiated. So that sets the right tone, I think, it's especially for the civil service to understand where he's coming from as a prime minister. However, we are still waiting to see how this will translate into actual policy. For example, the National Anti-Corruption Plan expires at the end of this year in 2023, and we haven't yet heard whether the NACP itself is going to be extended or whether there will be a new plan altogether. Because, you know, in reality, if you look at the midterm progress report of 2020-2021, only, I think it's like a very small, less than 10% of the long list of initiatives in the NACP have actually been achieved. The rest of them are in progress, in various stages of progress, of course, but that still means that there's a long way to go. And the government has also not really let the public know whether the GIACC, which is this government agency that was set up under the Prime Minister's office during the PH administration in 2018, whether that's going to stay on or not. And if not, then, you know, which is the agency that will take over these kinds of policy reforms on institutional reforms?
Tricia, thank you so much for speaking with me. Dr. Tricia Yeo from Ideas Malaysia, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.